Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, in a show of Pan-African solidarity, more than 100 African writers and human rights activists are calling on Eritrea's President Isaias Afwerki to protect basic freedoms and human rights in his country. The activists, including Nobel laureate Wole Soyinka of Nigeria, expressed their concern over the continued arrest and detention of journalists and activists in the country. The letter pointed out that over the past two decades, Eritrea, despite its human resource wealth, has been described as the most closed society in Africa, a situation that was unfortunate given that the country had, quote, so much to offer not only to Africa, but also the world. Human rights organizations have long called attention to the poor human rights record in the country, reporting that thousands of prisoners of conscience were languishing in prisons across the country, where they were denied access to legal counsel and the rights of visitation from their families. The Eritrean government responded to the letter by dismissing both its concerns and its timing, saying that during the years when the country was struggling for independence, they had no solidarity from Pan-African voices with their cause or struggles. Quote, in all these difficult decades, voices of conscience in the wider international community, and especially African voices, official or otherwise, were conspicuous for their absence and deafening silence. So the question then is, how effective was this show of Pan-African solidarity by these activists and writers? And what does it mean for the many political prisoners still held in the country, in Eritrea, and the call for political reforms in the country? And as we're looking at this issue, we also want to ask other questions, including this very important one that came to light after this letter was released. The letter that went viral that is being discussed around the continent. The question is, do Africans have the right to call on governments as a show of solidarity when the government is clamping down on or denying the rights of its citizens? And is there a history to this kind of Pan-African solidarity and support? Those are some of the questions that we hope to address on this show and future shows. But first, let's get to the bottom of why this letter was necessary in the first place. And joining me on the phone is one of the people behind drafting this letter, award-winning Angolan writer and human rights activist, Rafael Marques de Moraes. Mr. Marques was imprisoned for his work in the late 90s when he called President Dos Santos a dictator, former Angolan President Dos Santos. Rafael was only released after an international outcry. Rafael, what can you tell us about this letter and how did it come about?
A number of leading activists have been thinking of coming together to express more solidarity towards one another and to people and to countries that have been suffering the most. Mm. And it's just an idea that came about as a result of lots of brainstorming. And then we decided, a number of us met recently and decided to go ahead with Eritrea because it's the most closed society in Africa, and where we have journalists, and many of us are journalists. I personally was criticized once by the niece of an Eritrean journalist who's been in jail for 18 years for our inability to call on these Eritrean journalists that have been in jail for 18 years now. Mm. We're talking about Seyoum Tesfaye, Dawit and Emmanuel, so that they can effectively feel that they have not been abandoned by their colleagues in the continent.
Right.
And that attempting to express their freedom is not a crime, and they should not be held for 18 years without trial, without their relatives even knowing if they're still alive or not, because they've never been allowed to receive visitors.
Who did you address it to, and what do you hope to achieve?
We have addressed it to President Isaias Afwerki to be mindful that we African activists, academics, journalists and others are standing together in solidarity of the Eritrean people. And what we want to achieve is the openness of Eritrea and the release of these prisoners. and we want to be allowed to visit them in the meantime.
Do you know if President Afwerki was able to read it yet?
I've read one from the Eritrean ambassador to Japan, calling us essentially as stooges of colonialism. That is what is really mind-boggling. When you have a regime that oppresses his own people and tries to find legitimacy on it by claiming it to be any act for freedom, any act for democracy, to be a byproduct of colonialism or imperialism. And be mindful that even President Afwerki in his fight for the independence of Eritrea counted on support of many countries and many individuals outside Eritrea. So why shouldn't the Eritrean people count on the solidarity of their brothers and sisters in Africa?
So
empty arguments of colonialism or imperialism that will deter us from doing what is right,
okay,
which is to express our long overdue solidarity to the people of Eritrea.
So the first official response towards this letter was from an ambassador, and instead of positively accepting it, he's already calling you stooges of Western imperial powers. Is this a reaction you expected? And in essence, do you feel like this letter was just more symbolic than it will achieve any tangible results?
It is not a symbolic letter. Yes, it's a letter that is filled with words, but it's also filled with the willingness of African activists to act and to continue to put pressure on the Eritrean authorities until we have a positive answer. And we calling upon the government of Eritrea, the president of Eritrea, as individuals who want to engage in dialogue, who want to help to bring Eritrea to this broader dialogue that is happening in Africa for democracy, human rights, and transparency. Each one of our countries has its own set of problems, but that has not stopped us of expressing solidarity to one another and engaging dialogue in talks and to have people traveling back and forth to meet with one another. So how many Eritreans have been allowed to attend meetings on human rights, on democracy, and have returned home and have not been jailed if they've been allowed to leave for those reasons? So we do not want Eritrea to continue to be an isolated country from the rest of Africa. We want it to be part of this growing discussion on how we should find what is better for the peoples of these countries. And there is a major problem as well, is the plight of Eritreans that try to leave the country to seek a better life, to seek freedom. 500,000 Eritreans have already left the country because of the regime. And we want that to change. We want Eritreans to be able to enjoy their peace and prosperity in their own country. We are not Westerners. We are Africans. And we are using our voice of unity to say, welcome us, brother, talk to us.
Do you know of any mechanism within the African Union or a platform where you can address some of these issues?
We have every country represented, the African country represented in this petition. So it's really important for us also to address to our presidents, to our leaders, that the issue of Eritrea must be raised at the African Union in the strongest possible manner, so that we can see solutions to some of these very grave concerns. You have countries that have, take Zimbabwe for instance, we hope that once Mugabe was out, there wouldn't be much repression as it is happening now with activists who have gone to a conference on nonviolence. But these activists were allowed to leave the country and have returned. And we are toying with the system, the court system, that says we'll try them, there is need for more evidence. At least there is a discussion, and that's what we want to see in Eritrea.
Hi, I'm Susan Yaki of VOA's International Edition. VOA's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of some of the world's greatest experts on international issues. But you don't have to tune in at broadcast time. Listen when you want. Just go to voanews.com. Click the Programs tab and scroll down to International Edition.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. On the show today, we are talking about this letter that was sent by African activists and authors and journalists. The letter calls on the Eritrean president, Isaias Afwerki, to allow for a delegation to visit the country and to open dialogue on the human rights situation in the country, especially for prisoners, and also calls for democratic reforms in Eritrea. And the government of Eritrea responded to the letter that caught global attention for the show of solidarity by Africans to an issue that is taking place on the continent. Many welcoming the spirit behind the act. And it had us asking ourselves here on the show, is there precedent to this kind of Pan-African solidarity where Africans have spoken out on behalf of their compatriots in other African countries, offering support on a local cause or local causes, or speaking out on behalf of fellow Africans that are struggling against either local or foreign forces? And for that, I reached Ugandan author Milton Alimadi in New York. Milton is the author of Heart of Darkness, the book Heart of Darkness, and the book talks about the history of Western media demonization of Africa. So, Milton, I just wanted to get your point of view on this issue.
Well, yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, let me address the part about the regime dismissing it. I think it's a mistake for the regime to dismiss it and to even imply that these voices were not in solidarity with Eritreans when they were fighting for their own independence. That is not true. Obviously, many Africans were supportive of their revolution, and many Africans were happy that ultimately they achieved their goals and became an independent state. So that needs to be taken off the table. So to suggest that Africans are now taking a cynical approach, that is not true. What Africans want to see done is for the liberalization that we see going on in Ethiopia today to be replicated and in Eritrea. Mm-hmm. Many of those people that have been detained incommunicado for many, many years. Mm. And they were not enemies of the state. They wanted a more inclusive country. They loved their country. And that is why these intellectuals and activists have decided to endorse that letter. Mm. Is this a new approach? It is not. Africans conducted similar campaigns in South Africa and in other parts of the continent. When Nelson Mandela was incarcerated, he was sustained knowing that not only in South Africa, but in the rest of the continent and around the world, people were supporting him. The moral support that he knew he had from around the world helped sustain him and kept him hopeful until he was released 27 years after incarceration.
Right, right.
So similarly, the victims that are incarcerated in Eritrea today also feel hope, and they feel sustained when they see the global community coming together to support their cause. And their cause is to see a more inclusive Eritrea, which will benefit all Eritreans. And that is how the regimes to see it as well. We as Africans, we're very quick when it comes to condemning racism, for example, or condemning apartheid, but when it comes to mistakes or repression under our own governments by fellow Africans, we've often been mute or silent. So that is why this is a very good development.
That was Ugandan author Milton Alimadi. I reached him in New York. Listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyo. If you're just joining us on the show today, we are talking about Eritrea. A group of human rights activists recently wrote to the country's president, Isaias Afwerki. They're asking him for permission to allow them to visit the journalists, the many journalists and other political prisoners that are held in the country. Many have never been able to see their family members. They've never been brought before a court of law. And others are unaccounted for since they have not been visited by their families or legal counsel. And in another show of solidarity and a sign of what many see as a sign of increasing pressure on the government of Eritrea, thousands of Eritreans recently started a social media campaign calling for political reforms in their country. The campaign under the hashtag Enough in Tigrinya has been driven by young Eritreans living in Europe and in the U.S., basically living outside of the country. And one such activist is Vanessa Tsehai, a law student based in the U.K. Vanessa's uncle, Seyoum Tsehai, is a prominent journalist who was detained and has never been heard from since then. Vanessa tells me that she continues to fight for his release and to highlight that under President Isaias Afwerki, the country has had no independent civil society organizations or media outlets. I reached Vanessa in London. Vanessa, welcome. Let me ask you to start. What do you think about this letter that was recently signed by activists and journalists asking for the Eritrean government to give them access to detainees, including your uncle?
I think it's very timely, and I think, if anything, it's overdue. I think what's happening in Eritrea has been happening for a very long time. It's a country that's been topping every list of the worst press freedom countries when it comes to, you know, the amount of people leaving the country every month. And the need of African solidarity has been very pressing for a very long time. So this letter is incredible from the standpoint of an Eritrean who's been campaigning, but also as an African, to see the African pan-African solidarity with human rights causes on the continent, which I think is extremely necessary.
Okay.
Looking at what's happening in Sudan, I think what's happening in Eritrea needs the same amount of attention and support.
So tell us a little bit about the story of your uncle. Why was your uncle arrested and what was he charged with?
So my uncle is a journalist, like you mentioned, who founded actually the national television channel. He was one of the founding directors. And dedicated not only his time after independence, but also before, to the people of Eritrea. He was a teacher and a photographer during the war for independence, and worked after independence as a journalist, working firstly for the government and then as a freelance journalist, always being very critical about what's happening in the country, and was eventually imprisoned as a part of a roundup of journalists and politicians in 2001. None of them were ever charged with a crime. None of them were ever taken to court. But instead, they were taken from their homes and put in prison and have not seen their families, their friends, colleagues, or anyone or anything for the past now soon 18 years. We don't know if they're alive. We don't know what their conditions are or anything.
So you're saying that ever since his arrest, that you or your family members have not been able to visit him. Has he had any access to legal counsel?
No. So he was firstly imprisoned in the capital city of Asmara and was later transferred into a maximum security prison called Airaido in the middle of the desert, where no one has seen him or spoken to him. And this information that we have about it, you know, the fact that he might be in this prison is only secondhand information. None of this has been confirmed by the government, let alone any kind of access to legal counsel or international organizations or anything like that.
What had he done preceding his arrest? I mean, he had a high-profile job with the government. He not only participated in the struggle for independence of Eritrea, but he was also, like you said, one of the founders of the National TV. What had he done that might have triggered his arrest?
So my uncle was actually imprisoned once during the War of Independence as well. And I've never met him. But from what I've heard from his colleagues, both from the war and afterwards, from his friends, from his family, is that he was always, is very a very critical person and a very determined person and very committed to the principles of justice and democracy. And this is the reason why he joined the war. He fought for an Eritrea that was going to be ruled not only independently, but also by the principles of justice and democracy. So during the War of Independence, he reiterated these principles, both in his teaching as a teacher, but also in the struggle. And because of this, he was imprisoned for a year during the War of Independence. Afterwards, he continued to firmly stand by these principles. And eventually he was not fired, but he was demoted from this high position of being the director of the National Television Channel to something within the Ministry of Tourism, where he had no expertise or interest. So he resigned and became a freelance journalist, focusing solely on the well-being and the interests of the Eritrean people. He wrote about veterans, female veterans who were demoted and became cleaners on the street. He wrote about the disabled veterans who demonstrated and were met with incredible violence from the Eritrean regime at that point. He wrote about the National Service Program that was starting then. He wrote about protests by students who were protesting against this new National Service Program. So he was very committed to the Eritrean people and their well-being. And because he was actually never taken to trial, there was never an official charge or an arrest, we cannot say for sure that it was a specific article or cause that, you know, had him imprisoned at the end, but it was definitely his commitment to the Eritrean people that made him seen as a threat. And alongside the other people, you can see that there's a common thread, there's a red thread.
So he was basically critical of some of the local policies. Let me ask you about his case. Was his case an isolated case or isolated incidents, or is this something that was common in, or is still common in, the arrest of people who speak out against the government of Eritrea?
Yeah, his profile as a very critical person was not unique to him. It was something that was common amongst all the people that were imprisoned alongside him in 2001. And the fact that they were imprisoned in 2001 was not a coincidence. It was the year Eritrea was supposed to have their first election. It was the year the government decided to shut down the free press, to imprison my uncle, 9 other journalists, and a group of people who had written a public letter, open letter, from within the government. The politicians and military kind of personnel who had all written an open letter to the government. Mm. So he wound up all the people that had both publicly but also had the profile of being very critical, who also had been critical of the government at the same time. And this was the big shutdown. Some people have referred to this period as the time Eritrea officially became a dictatorship. It was when, all the free press was shut down, all the journalists, all the critical journalists and politicians were either imprisoned, and a lot of them also fled the country.
Okay.
At the same time. And since then, it's been complete silence from that side.
So his arrest, that period was kind of a turning point in Eritrean politics. Ever since his arrest, things have kind of been, I guess, trending downwards in terms of, democratic reforms and human rights violations happening in the country. Let me ask you about this letter that was recently written. About 100 activists and journalists wrote to the Eritrean government asking for them to access people like your uncle. The government of Eritrea just responded. What do you think about their response? Have you been able to read it?
Yeah, it was one of the most poorly argued response or letter I've ever seen in my life. It was kind of centered around June being a quote-unquote holy month for Eritrea because of March's Day, which is the day that where we kind of celebrate the sacrifices of our martyrs who fought for Eritrean independence. And for me, as an Eritrean activist, as an Eritrean individual, I celebrate these martyrs because they gave their lives for a free and independent, just and democratic Eritrea. And any kind of celebration and use of their name and their struggle by the Eritrean government is completely hypocritical because they fought for the very thing that the Eritrean government is denying the Eritrean people. So just the beginning of the letter and using March's Day and June as a holy month is completely ridiculous. And then it goes on to just list so many different points. I don't know how much in detail you want me to go into this letter. But for example, they completely disregard the fact that my uncle and the other journalists and politicians were imprisoned. The government of Eritrea has never officially in court or anything like that kind of declared a state of emergency. What's happened after the War of Independence and then the border dispute with Ethiopia was the government of Eritrea continued to say that because of the border war with Ethiopia, We have to shut down parliament because of that. We have to cancel the elections because of that. We have to imprison these people. But it's been proven time and time again that it was never proportionate to the threat of the border war with Ethiopia posed to the Eritrean government's sovereignty or independence or anything like that. So it's been completely disproportionate. It's been proven that it's disproportionate. And in this letter, they're in one sentence, they're saying, well, these people's imprisonment they're probably referring to has been proven to have been necessary because of the situation that the Eritrean government was put in at that time. But that does not explain why the government of Eritrea still, or the regime of Eritrea still has not released these people, given them a trial, or continue to imprison people, not only because of their political affiliations or opinions or statements, but because of their religious affiliations, because of their the fact that they happen to belong to religious groups that are not sanctioned by the government, or because they have said anything, something against the Eritrean government, or because they refuse to participate in the national service. They also disregard the fact that people are actually fleeing the country because of these political harassments from the Eritrean government and because of the national service program, which they are not even referring to in wording, but are simply saying that people are leaving because of pull factors,
right,
and not because they're harassed by the Eritrean government because of their political affiliation or because they're forced to participate in a program that is neither necessary nor legal and is exploiting them of their of all their power and potential from the, to the people.
So I've seen basically a tendency to be dismissive of any type of criticism or either whether it's a report from the UN or for any from any human rights organization. There's this type of dismissiveness that comes from the government of Eritrea. Have you ever seen, at any point, do they ever accede or accept that they might be wrong about a policy that is not working? What do you think their intention is in being this dismissive about these reports?
There's like two camps. Like, not camps, but there's two groups of the pro-government people that we see. We have the government themselves, like this statement that was written by the Ministry of Information. We have ambassadors that are tweeting and stuff like that. And then we have people affiliated with the government or government supporters based in the diaspora. Some diasporans who are currently living in Eritrea still in an extremely privileged position of being a diaspora and coming, being privileged by the Eritrean government to actually treat diaspora Eritreans and kind of people in Eritrea in a very, very different way. So that's kind of the two camps and or the two groups. And the Eritrean government wants power. They want to stay in power, and any kind of criticism or any kind of, you know, movement or group of people that are criticizing them in any way is seen as a threat to their power and is completely disregarded and, you know, demonized in whatever way. And the other group have some other kind of interests, whether they have economic interests or power or whatever they have in the country. They've never admitted to any faults in their policies. They've never changed the policy as a result of any objection from the people. They've never showed any interest of changing the country for the better. They keep mentioning the quote-unquote government of Eritrea, so the regime, the Eritrean regime's intention to nation building, their intention to build a better country, their intention to, they say that they're time because of this border war with Ethiopia. But all of this is completely made up because there hasn't been any genuine or any attempts at all to build democratic institutions, to have elections, to release journalists, to implement the constitution, which I should have mentioned earlier. Eritrea is not governed by a constitution. To my knowledge, it's the only country in the world without a constitution that it's governed by. And none of this has been ever been mentioned by the Eritrean government to have been worked on or ever any kind of intention to actually start on. So they've been mentioning this time and time again after the border war. And before the border war, they're saying that all of this would have been implemented after the war was over. And after the war, they're saying, oh, well, of course, we're working on it. But there's been no proof that they're actually doing that.
That was Vanessa Seha, an Eritrean activist and law student based in London. And I also want to thank all of you who tuned in on the show today, whether it's on the radio or online or different social media platforms where you're able to listen to us. Be sure to check us out on Facebook and our YouTube. Until next time, as the African elders say, a smart enemy is better than a stupid friend. Till next time, goodbye, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall.